Thomas Spurgeon of the Comics Reporter, Heidi McDonald of the Beat, celebrating her 30th anniversary of comics journalism today, more or less. Bruce Johnson of Bleeding Cool, who is posting about this panel even as we're conducting it, and Andy Corey of Comics Alliance. Thank you all for coming. Thank you all for coming. I just want to ask, first of all, what's your job? What do you do? Who are you speaking to, and what are you telling them? Anyone who wants to go first?
Me. I'm writing for myself. And thankfully, there's enough people who like it as well. But I'm always writing for myself.
Okay. Yourself is the audience.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the same for us as well. We don't presume to be like blowing the lid on anything exactly. We're talking about topics and works and creators whose work we just enjoy. And we're trying to. The idea is our enthusiasm will attract other people who have the same enthusiasm, or convert people to the same enthusiasm that we have for the stuff that we talk about.
I mean, I think I've always, whenever I'm asked this question, I say the same thing, that I'm writing for myself, because I think in order to get up every day and do it every day, you know, pretty much every day, you really have to want to do it, and, you know, there has to be some element of self-satisfaction in there. So I think at the end of the day, if there wasn't something that I was enjoying and doing it, I wouldn't do it. But at the same time, I do try to be cognizant of what people are looking for from my site, and I do take it very seriously that people read my site with their morning coffee, and I mean that's like the highest honor that you can possibly have. So, you know, even though what I'm writing is kind of pleasing my own viewpoint, I try to be respectful of their time as well, so and give them information that is coffee worthy.
Yeah, I write to antagonize Heidi, basically.
I write to antagonize Heidi. Well, I think, yeah.
I write to impress Heidi.
That's right, Andy was the first one I asked to be on the panel.
I guess you end up writing for yourself. There's not enough money in it to be writing for anyone but yourself, I guess. Yeah, that makes sense.
It does, but you also have to have somebody reading it to be making money off it at all. How financially feasible is it to be comics blogging now for a living? Is it something that you can support yourself on? Is that getting harder? Is that getting easier? How does that change?
I could live off of Comics Reporter, but I wouldn't want to. Does that make sense? And it's a little easier now than I think it was a while ago. I mean, people are used to advertising. I run the site through advertising, so people are used to that. And I think if you're around long enough, what you end up with advertising, at least, is you end up with a patronage model where people just want you to stick around. It's not that they're not, believe me, they're not getting like tons of hits and click-throughs through my site. But I think the advertisers see some value in what I do or the coverage that I provide and want to support that a little bit. So that, I think that part's easier. If you stuck around, you're not going away, I think. And also, if you have a bunch of ads on the site, it looks really impressive, and someone will buy an ad just to have an ad. So that works.
But you own your site. Heidi, you do too. No, you don't.
Completely work for hire. I work for AFTAPLUS.
Right. I don't know how many people like who are here covering the convention can do stuff like that for a living. Jonah Weiland, who owns CBR, he makes a living doing that. I work for AOL Huffington Post. That's where I get my money. I don't know that comics journalists who don't own their site or work for a big company can make a living doing just comics.
Well, I don't make a living doing the Beat. I mean, I make a portion of my living doing it. I have several jobs. I also work for Publishers Weekly, and then I take on consulting and other gigs. And between the two of them, between Publishers Weekly and the Beat, I can make a living. Though not for New York City, really. So, hence the other jobs. But and both of them are comics and journalism related, so, I mean, I guess if you put them together somehow, they could be one job. And at one time, they were one job, but at one time, The Beat was published by Publishers Weekly, And Publishers Weekly was getting a new owner, and I didn't feel that the new owner would be, I didn't trust that it was going to be somebody that I could work with, so I managed to get it back for myself, when I'm very glad that I did, so. But the new owner turned out to be absolutely awesome, so I really lucked out there as well.
I want to ask you guys a question, Douglas, because you do a lot of writing about comics, but you're a freelance writer. If you stopped doing all the music and other criticism and other reporting, do you think you could...
I would die in the gutter in my
So I think just like in creator-owned comics, it's advantageous for a lot of people to have creator-owned websites.
Yeah. Now, one thing that Laura mentioned back, our former editor at Comics Alliance, I should mention that I wrote for Comics Alliance for a long time, and I stopped writing for Comics Alliance a couple weeks ago, but no animosity, we're all still pals, and still be friends.
Yeah.
But one thing that she's mentioned is that she felt like an awful lot of her job was interacting with the readership and responding to them, and them responding to her, and in some cases just like trying to moderate the comments section.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have comments at all. You have a letters column that sometimes pops up.
No, I have a letters column, and half of those are made up, to be honest. I couldn't. And the one thing that's nice about what the site is nice in that it gets to be what I want it to be, and I can't. I founded the Comics Journal message board back in the 90s, and I'm going to hell for that. It was a contentious, awful message board attached to the Comics Journal site and needed tons of moderation. It was just full of sick weirdos, of which I had turned into one. It was an amazing place, and amazing meaning the opposite of amazing. So I didn't want to do that with the site. I don't have any... I'll run any letter that someone sends me, unless it's crazy, but I don't... I look on like what Laura did dealing with the Comics Alliance letters, or what Heidi does with some of the comments, and I could never do that. I would just cry all the time if I had to do that.
The nature of the comments on each of our websites is very different, I think, than
Rich.
Well, I don't actually read them.
I was going to say, do you ever read your comments?
Very occasionally. It's like a pit of hell in there. No, I'm not. It's the internet. Welcome to the internet. Message boards are kind of message boards, unless they're incredibly strictly moderated, which then puts off whole lots of other people from actually even commenting in the first place. And you're going to have to expect what you're going to get. I mean, they're very useful things in that they help people be loyal to the site. There's a lot of... they feel involved a lot more if they're actively
engaging.
Yeah, exactly.
Engaging them.
But
engagement.
Oh, yeah, but yeah. Actually reading them.
Nah.
If something's a real note of interest, or there's a real problem, a very serious problem, I'll get to hear about it, and I'll hopefully that's when I start to moderate. If you start having people doing death threats or rape threats or whatever they may be, then I'll step in. But generally, I just try and stay out of there.
I like the comments on Heidi's blog.
Well, yeah, the reason why I keep them on there is, I mean, believe me, there are days I feel like, you know, the Tom option, which is none, or the Rich option, which is, you know, ignore. But, I mean, once in a while, there'll be this really awesome comment that, like, you know, I posted about some old cartoonist, and their granddaughter will be on there a year later and say, you know, I'm so happy that you wrote this about my grandma. And, I mean, that doesn't seem like... you know, too much. But for me, I like when I see that and know that somebody saw something about, you know, somebody and, you know, was gratified by it. I mean, that really means a lot to me. So, and sometimes people post pretty insightful things. I mean, I have good commenters like Brian Hibbs and Kurt Busick and, you know, a lot of pros comment on my message board. And, you know, I would love to maintain that. So
it drives traffic to all your sites, though, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's not a charity.
I read something, a study about that recently. It says that it might not be as valuable as... I guess I shouldn't even mention that, because I can't remember any details from that. But I like that Heidi has a population of professionals in her comments. Rich has pretty witty people in his comments.
If you can find them, there are some there, yes. You might have deal goes through an awful lot of other stuff together.
I'm frankly very annoyed that Comics Alliance has become known not just for the content, but for the comments, and they're like two distinctly different animals, and if it was up to me, I'd just turn them off. I like interacting with the readers on Twitter and on Tumblr and things like that, but like when Laura left, one of the first things I did is I just took my email off the website and my bio.
Can I ask you, how much does that affect the AOL... Huffington Post ownership in the readers that Comics Alliance get? I mean, do you get different commenters because a different audience is being brought to the site?
Sometimes, it depends on the issue. Sometimes a story will get sort of shown on another piece of the AOL network, yeah. the Huffington Post network, and we'll get a totally different flavor of comments. As you all know, comic book readers have a very distinctive way of communicating on message boards, and we get a lot of that, and it's always the Comics Alliance flavor of it is very political, and when we do something that gets wider, we actually get kind of a better class of comments, I think.
Okay.
But it's not really something we can control when that happens.
It's when you get linked by the Drudge Report. That's when I really notice the comments, I think.
Yeah. That's really when I wish they just weren't on.
And who goes in there and, I mean, does who goes in there and mops up?
That's a good question. I want nothing to do with it. It's a whole sort of, like, matrix that I will never understand. I guess with traffic, too. I don't understand any of those things. I just do the content, you know? And that's why the comments can... Dealing with them, especially when they get to those death threat levels that I'm sure all of us have had at some point or another, it just detracts so much from what you're trying to do, and it's just so has really nothing to do with anything you're trying to talk about.
I will say this: I've gotten a way thicker skin than when I started this, because I mean, when I started doing this 10 years ago, and like somebody posted something like, and I did get personal comments, and it bothered me, and I was like, who is that? I'd be looking up their ISP and figuring out what I could do to get even, and I didn't do it. I mean, sometimes I would give them a smackdown on the board or just delete their comments, and then as time goes by, I'm just like, delete, block. I mean, I don't really think about it anymore, to be honest. And
I called one guy's employer when I worked for the Comics Journal and asked him if since his employee was wasting my time, if he could stop that, or I would call back and waste some more of his time. That was awful of me.
Was one person.
Awesome.
Yeah, man. I hope that wasn't Ed, was it? Ed was my longtime stalker who was like the worst on the board there.
Ed Brubaker.
Ed Brubaker. No, another Ed.
I think I could encourage them. There was one guy who was kind of like stalking me a bit on Twitter. Every single thing I'd post, he would start tweeting about how terrible it was. Every single post. And, I post a lot, so he was tweeting a lot. So I had a look at his website, found he was publishing a comic book. So I had a look at the comic book. It wasn't bad, so I did a nice little bit of feature on it. And he stopped posting all these horrible comments suddenly. I think I must have just screwed with his head too much.
That was community engagement.
There we go.
Yeah, if DC tried that with Rich, things would be very different.
I love DC. I do. I got a man hug from Dan Didio yesterday morning. He's a really nice fella. Called me over, gave me a nice big hug. There were photos.
We started getting some of those spam comments that are just replicated all over the place, and someone was complaining to me about it, and they said, "Will you do anything about it?" And I said, "If I can help it, no." Because I want them to discourage people from commenting as much as possible.
So you want to go the Comics Reporter route?
I do. I love the Tumblr model, where there's really no interactivity apart from hearts or nothing. Or if you really, really are upset, you have to reblog it and write something about it, and no one ever has to look at it. I don't like that people come to my site and they read something that someone worked really hard on. It's a very thoughtful, incredible piece of criticism or editorial, and right underneath it is like you're a bunch of socialist, hipster pederasts or something like that.
But you are.
Irrespective. If the content's really good, it shouldn't matter.
That's not how the internet works, Andy. No.
How frustrating is it to have to come up with new content all the time? Are there stories that you wish you could keep at the top and keep coming back to every single day if you could? I know you had the Danish Cartoons Hangover update like every day for a couple of years, which is fantastic.
I repeat everything all the time. What are you talking about? You just do. You can. It's the internet, man. You can put whatever you want on top or on the bottom.
Yeah.
That's one thing I find crazy about Comics Alliance is that you kind of whip through stuff really quickly. That format is just crazy. It goes right off the front page.
It's sort of conventional, like professional blogging wisdom that you're meant to have, like a couple posts every hour to sort of people, as they go through work, there's new content for them all the time. But it's something that we're going to take another look at. Because it is frustrating sometimes when things do get lost. And you know, there's obviously like a pretty intense workflow to facilitate all that kind of content. And it's something that, you know, I'm mindful of. And I would like to say that we can do something better about it. But I'm looking into that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that has to do with formatting. And I mean, I think there are ways. I mean, the Beat is getting a redesign. A redesign almost launched right during Comic-Con, but I thought that wasn't the right time to learn a new posting system. So that will hopefully give things a little bit more boost that wants to stick around. But, you know, I mean, the daily content grind, that's why I think sometimes, you know, we do have little tiffs. Every once in a while something will flare up. But, I mean, Tom, you just wrote something very, very kind and thoughtful about me on my blog. And, you know, you said we had a sheepdog and
Sam the sheepdog and Ralph the wolf.
Yes.
Remember they used to punch, they'd go after each other and then punch the clock at the end of the day?
Yeah. I feel like a lot of the comics industry is exactly like those two, to be honest. And after the clock is punched, It's over, but you know what? I forgot where I was going with this. It's been a long day, but anyway, I guess I love blogging. That's what I was going to be. It's like, yeah. So you know, I respect so much the fact that Tom and Rich, you know, get up every day, and Andy gets up every day, and they do it every day. You know, I know what that's like, and it's incredibly demanding. And you know, I mean, Rich was doing it here when he was on the panel. So you know, I really respect that. And I mean, if I could just write one post a week. Maybe I would, but you know what? I would tweet constantly. So, I mean, I know I personally have a insatiable need to communicate all the time. And so, you know, blogging is that's a good outlet for me.
I would love it if someone could calculate how much more we write if you just add up all our tweets in addition to the daily content, but I'm too lazy to do that. But maybe Douglas could do it.
In my copious free time. But do you feel like... the actual quality of your work ever suffers from having to bang out something every half hour?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. No question.
How do you make good work under those conditions? How do you keep that good work in front of people long enough for it to have any impact under those conditions?
By writing it. I mean, it seems to work. I mean, I could spend a lot longer on each post. I don't think it would be, you know, any more popular. And there's more stuff to talk about. It's just the way it works.
It's definitely a cost-benefit calculation. Unfortunately, it has to be. I know that there's things that I've written. I'll just speak for myself because I work with a team of writers as well. That I've written that I know if I had like another day, maybe I could make another phone call. Maybe I could have, you know, got someone on the record and it could have been a little bit better, or I could have had someone else read it. But it's just the nature of blogging and doing web content professionally. You just have to move on to the next thing sometimes and hope you do better. I don't write as much as I used to because I do get really concerned about it, which is why I've become more of an editor than I work with other writers and shape things like that. You know, because other people have more time than I do, and I feel more confident about that content sometimes than I do when I write something myself that I know I needed another day or something on. I have a luxury because I have a team. You know, so.
I feel almost exactly the opposite. I think that the more I write, the better it's probably going to be. And I'm always trying to find ways, you know, if I can get past my own laziness, I think if I could write a bunch of stuff, then it's going to be better somehow or something. I don't know, there's something very appropriate, like the immediacy of posting on a site. It's like when you tweet, you know, the best time to tweet is when you're tired and whacked out of your brain and you just start insulting DC and Marvel, you know, in 140 characters over and over again. Just let that... But I kind of feel that way about writing. I almost feel like I wish I had the time to do more writing for the site because I almost feel like I want to get past my own bad... I don't know. For me to say, like, to have another draft of something would say that I'm a good editor, and I'm not a good editor, so maybe I'm just better off writing more drafts. Write more stuff. I think that's my motto, or something. I don't know. But I almost have the exact opposite. I don't mind writing more, and I wish I just would write more.
I think there's something about almost like a burn feeling. I mean, if I'm writing lots on a day, and today has been a bit like that, there's a certain feeling, I guess a bit like an athlete, when you just keep pushing harder and harder, and then suddenly it all seems to work. You go past a burn, and it works. And then you become this writing beast.
I like how bloggers are, you know, the conjecture of what it might be like to be an athlete.
I was just going to say, I think somebody was talking to me recently about having writer's block, and they're like, no, what do you do when you face the blank sheet of paper? I mean, right. I mean, that's such a laughable idea. I mean, and I realized that back in the day, I mean, maybe there, I do put things off, but I write every single day, you know, and I wish I would. I think Tom actually does. I actually agree with you. I think the more you do it, the more you, you know, the muscle is better and more fluid and more flexible. But you know, sometimes a second pass, there's very few things that don't improve from a second pass for everybody, you know, on most things. So
I just worry that the more you do something that you know is imperfect, the more mistakes you might make. But I think the truth of this might be somewhere in the middle of both answers, you know. I would love to write more of my own opinion stuff, but I end up doing a lot more news coverage just because I'm able to work with people who can do the opinion stuff and I can work with them on it. And I just do the stuff that I know I can do in an objective voice and I can get all the facts, like the journalism stuff. I handle more of that these days than I do the opinion stuff that I did when I started the site. Because I think the more I was writing, the better I think it was getting. But then I started getting very, you know, self-conscious about making mistakes. So I started working more with other people.
I've got a phrase which has served me well, I think, is yesterday's pixels. Which is, once it's been, it's gone. It's still there, but not as many people are looking at it. They're looking at what you're doing now.
Yeah.
So move on, always.
In anything where when you're putting stuff in front of people to see, you just always have to remember, invariably you're going to have a bad thing, and you'll do better next time.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if you're doing a blog, the next time is about 10 minutes away, or you know, however long. But yeah.
Are there kinds of comics news writing or comics journalism that are much harder to do if you're doing that bang up 12 posts a day format, or kinds of stories that you feel like are being undercovered by everybody?
Well, for me, the hardest is interviews because of all the transcription time. Purely, utterly, that's the kind of stuff I don't do as much because if I'm talking to someone on the phone, they'll give me stuff. If I have to actually transcribe it all, that eats up hours for something that I could have written in 10 minutes if I'd done something differently. Purely on a very practical basis, I can't do interviews like that anymore. It takes too long.
Interviews also don't necessarily perform very well. When you ask people what they want on their websites, they always, people say, oh, we want to read more interviews with you know, interesting people and stuff like that, but sometimes the numbers just don't bear it out. And this is a systemic problem, or maybe not problem, a systemic thing that exists in our business, especially the direct market business, is interviews are often about books that the interviewer hasn't read, and that the subject hasn't yet created, and that the readers won't read for at least 3 months. And that's just not fun for anybody involved in that situation. But then we want to do something maybe after the product is out and everyone's had a chance to read it. The creator's not interested in talking about it anymore because they're on to the next thing. And the publisher really doesn't want to talk about it anymore. You would be amazed at the response I've gotten from some publishers saying, we really like this book, it's out in the collection now. Can we show maybe like 20 pages of it and talk to the creator and really like do something with this? And they're so focused on the periodical press cycle and the direct market cycle, the pre-order cycle. It's a problem I think it's a problem that really affects everyone who does comics news sites.
Yes.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I don't really think I do a comics news site because, I mean, I do news, but I don't do it to the level that you guys do. I mean, I really try not to get involved in you know, the day-to-day scrum of Marvel and DC, because it's like you say, it's not time conducive for me. I mean, I can listen to, I went to, I don't want to say because they were really nice, but a publisher had a press conference and they asked me to go and I was like, oh, okay. And then I listened to it and I was really like, oh my God, I can't believe I spent half an hour listening to this and now I have to spend an hour writing it up. I'm not going to do that, you know? So, not even an hour. I mean, whatever it was going to be. And I know it was probably would have gotten me better traffic if I had done it, but I don't feel like my readers were really, it wasn't something, I try to give my readers something that they can't get elsewhere, and I mean, I don't really know You know, it's like the beat thing or whatever. So, you know, I think other people do things better than the beat does, and I'm happy to just quote it and link to it. So.
No, the thing about doing stuff better than anyone else does, the stuff that you do, I think that's absolutely key. I think probably for all of us, I guess. I mean, we've all got our strengths, and so we're always going to do, hopefully play to them, I guess, in these cases. I mean, do you ever actually try to do stuff, go after stuff that you know that you're not very good at to get better at it, to challenge yourself? Or are you happier with the comfort zone of what you know you do well?
Well, I mean, you know, you're always like, oh, man, it would be great if I could, you know, cover movies and I get to go to junkets in Australia and New Zealand and, you know, hang out with Peter Jackson and, you know, play with hobbits, so... but, you know, in order to get to that level would be a whole new career. I mean, you know, I would like to go to New Zealand, but that's one of my few goals in life, really. So, you know, I just want to get better. I mean, I want people to, you know, I want to inform them. I just want to do things. I want to be better at what I do and not be worse. You know?
I want to start a Kickstarter to send you to New Zealand now. I was really moved by that. You've got enough readers. You could do it.
I don't think so.
Kickstarter is what you said about trying something you're not usually good at. I was sort of taken aback by the amount of money that the Wood Mythology Kickstarter made and that no one was getting paid. And I didn't see anyone else really getting into that. And I decided, I felt like I had this compulsion, this obligation to really get into that. And I, over the course of weeks, interviewed people associated with that and looked into the money stuff. And I don't understand money.
That's why you're a blogger.
And it was a real difficult thing, and it turned out, I think, it was probably the most comprehensive piece on that topic. We really got into where the money was going, and tax stuff, and we talked to people who were financial planners about all that kind of thing, and how much it cost to print comics and stuff like that. And, I mean, I think it was a really good piece, but really nobody was that interested in it.
Oh, we love that. Are you joking?
Yeah,
everybody
was... I mean, you guys like it.
Yeah.
They didn't like it.
Wow.
And people always say, we want more like this, you know, let's... blow the lid off the money in the comics business. This is what you journalists need to be doing. And get in there, talk about how it's weird and messed up. And when you do stuff like that, no one really comes.
Yeah, sometimes I find it's just how you do it. I mean, numbers. I hate doing numbers. Statistics used to really mess with my mind. But then I started getting access to the numbers earlier than anyone else seemed to get them. So I kind of forced myself to do things not comfortable just to try and work out what these numbers meant and stuff. But the only way I could do that is to find ways to mean, what do they actually mean to people and the books that they read? And once I was able to do that, then I can write a headline that reflects that. And that will get the interest as well. So that was one, it just reminded me when you were talking about that, that's something that I actually tackled, something I wasn't very good at, and made myself a bit better at it, and found a way to relate it to people who, like me, didn't really like that numbers that much.
Yeah, you and Heidi, I think, do the sales... the numbers in a way that I know we couldn't. We don't even try. Like when I need to look up. The other day I was doing a piece that didn't end up working out about Marvel's trade paperback thing. I remember I had read stuff on Publishers Weekly and on the Beat about all that stuff and the numbers and where they were. So that was a helpful resource to me for sure.
Well, we try.
I like you're right. Everyone does. Everyone on the panel does something very distinct from the other sites that I think is at different times valuable. At least I'll speak for myself. It's valuable for me when I'm working on something. I can reference a bleeding cool thing, or I can look at what Tom had to say about something that I know he knows a lot about and I just never even heard of before. You know, I think that's what's fun about the ecosystem at the moment. There's a lot of the great sites that do a lot of the really different stuff.
Is there anything about which you feel like comics journalism in general is really myopic, stuff that does not get covered or does not get covered enough or does not get covered maybe the right way in general?
All of it?
Okay.
I mean, it's not, I don't know. I mean, it seems like one of those questions you're trying to figure something out. I just think that everything can be better. I'm completely screwed. I'm screwed up that there are so many people here.
Yeah, I'm looking at all you kids here. You don't read my site, do you?
What's happening here afterwards? Is it twilight after this?
Are you here for this panel? Oh, okay.
You know what? There are enough people here that we should take some questions. If you want to line up, there's microphones there. There will be questions.
Is it something after this? Is it?
There are some ground rules for the questions.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
The ground rules are these. First, you must ask your question in the form of a question. You get to ask one. It must be brief.
Oh.
And they can answer. Mine, you would like to know what you want to know.
I'm on this panel.
Oh. Wait
a minute. You
actually do have that.
All right.
Well done.
Oh boy, there's definitely something here afterwards, isn't there?
Yeah, when I saw all those people and the wolf heads walk in, I was like, you read the beat? I don't know.
What is the panel afterwards? Let's talk about that.
No.
Is the microphone in the middle on? Whoever's...
Comic-Con person, the microphone in the middle is not working.
They're not...
They're on a couple of people.
All right. How much research do you guys do before each story? Because, I mean, obviously you guys have very limited amount of time to just put everything together, so how much of that goes into actually researching whatever it is you're talking about?
Actually, I think, especially looking at the people here, our entire lives. We have been reading this stuff. We've been talking to people our entire lives. I've been hygiene for 20 years. I've been 30 years. I've been doing for 20. We live and breathe this stuff. So an awful lot of the research I find for an article that I'm writing is stuff that I know and have known for a long time. So that makes them an awful lot of it, I'd say.
Unfortunately, after 30 years, you begin to forget what you knew. So I still have to do a refresher here and there. But, you know, I try to find new things. And I mean, it's hard. You know, like going back to the dawn of the internet, you know, in the pre-Pleistocene years of 2002, I mean, if you Google, you usually found some nugget that was unknown, you know. And now when you Google for something, it's IMDb for like 20 things. So you have to really dig a lot more to find really interesting things or have good sources, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really, I mean, you know, Rich, you have great sources. And I have Todd,
yeah.
You have a lot of people who are, you know, helping you out. I have a few. But,
I live and breathe by people at Marvel and DC who hate working there and want to tell me reasons why they hate working there. I mean, that's how I exist, basically.
It also depends on the nature of the story. Like, what I was mentioning before about the money thing, or I wrote a big piece about Dave Stevens and the Rocketeer that I took about a week to research. But some stuff, as Rich says, you just know because of your experience. All day we talk to these people, we read these books, we talk to each other, I can't read that.
Yes.
Someone just held up a sign.
No, yeah. I think it's time. You know, just to talking about time and how long it takes, I mean, sometimes it works against you because I wanted to write a piece about, I went to TCAF, the Toronto Comic Arts Festival, at the beginning of May, and it was awesome. It was like the greatest weekend of my life. I mean, for comics-wise, it was just so great. I said, I've got to write the best piece I ever wrote about this and to capture the wonderfulness. And, you know, so I was like, oh, I don't have time to do the wonderfulness, so I waited, and, you know, then I started on it, and I got, like, a little bit, and then I'm like, oh, I've got to take a break now, because I've got to, you know, this really deserves the time I can give it. And, you know, of course, I've never written it. You know, so, I mean, you kind of have to really, and I feel horrible because, you know, I think I'll still do it in some form, because I have to get it out there. But, you know, sometimes you just, it is kind of like, I mean, I'm a little bit more, like, than Rich. I mean, Rich has a very short time frame,
yeah.
Brain, and mine's a little bit longer, and, you know, Andy, I think yours is normal, human,
yeah.
And Tom, you have laser-like focus. I mean, you do. You have a long, long, long time frame that you experience things in, and so, you know, sometimes you gotta just... Sometimes it's better that way, you know, as you were saying earlier. So just go with your gut. I mean, I think we all fly by the seat of our gut.
Yeah, I'll just give you an example this morning. Last night I found out about the Sandman relaunch by Neil Gaiman and J.H. Williams III, come out for DC Vertigo. And just because I knew all the previous attempts to make that happen, and then if it had changed, then something else must have happened within the company. Just because that's all going around my head like a mad thing, I was able to just write all that out and get it out. But if I'd actually had to research that would have taken hours. I didn't, so, you know, 10 minutes is fine.
Thank you.
Hi.
My question is, what was your, like, why comics journalism specifically? Like, what got you into comics journalism instead of, because it seems like you would all be very good at, you know, whatever you apply yourself to, so.
Well, okay.
Well, for me, I never thought I would be in comic journalism. I came from web content. I was working at a Sony company doing music stuff, like an iTunes kind of company, and then I was writing about pop culture for MySpace and places like that. And I happened to know Jonah Weiland socially, because we both lived in LA, and I was always a big comic book fan. And he had someone writing a story about a Grant Morrison event at Meltdown Comics that wasn't very good, and he asked me if I could take a pass at it because I would happen to be there, and I just did, and he's like, would you like to edit all the new stories on comic book resources as a job until then you get your next big media job? And that just became, like, I became a comics content media journalist type person from there, and then I moved on to AOL from that. I mean, I never thought I'd be doing it as long as I have, but I love comics, and I love this community, and the people I work with, and so I stayed, you know?
I had a job at one of the home shopping networks back in the 1990s, and my job, I watched women sniff panties. They hired me to devise a system by which they would fire people I would devise program, or like, formula for counting how efficient workers were. So I would have to watch the workers work. So my first day, they put me on a stool and had me watch these poor ladies, very nice ladies, as they got boxes of returned underwear, which they had to sniff to see if they were worn. At that point, I knew my master's degree was being wasted. Job in the world, I couldn't actually tell. So I had that job. A man had like a seizure when I came on because I was the guy who came up with a formula that they fired people after. It's the worst job ever. So I saw an ad. I used to skip the job and go out, and I saw an ad in the Comics Journal. I said, that sounded pretty good. Seattle sounded better than watching the ladies sniff underwear in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. So I wanted to move to Seattle, and that's how I did. I suck at everything else more. So this seems like I had a strip for a while in the early 2000s, and that failed, and my friend felt sorry for me. So he said, why don't you try writing about comics again? They have blogs now. What's a blog? So we started that, and the first day, we killed Superman. Uh-huh. So Chris Reed died our first day. So, yeah. It's a heartwarming story.
I just like that you say you're only good at two things, was the panty thing and blogging.
I was really good at that panty thing.
I tell you what, if you blogged about that...
Yeah, no.
Wow.
But if you'd only been able to do a screen cap.
That was the blog. That was the blog I should have done.
Absolutely. So I had a weird kind of way, because I kind of came to it from a different culture, coming from England, and in Britain, as I think some people have now discovered, the British press does things in a different way than the American press. Often the American press is very kind of genteel and cultured, very respectful of the people it covers, and the British press just want to tear people apart. And I noticed that didn't happen at all in the comics press. And here I was surrounded with examples of that with all other kinds of media, and I thought I'd kind of give it a go. And then I was at university, and this thing called the internet was there back in 92. And it seemed the perfect opportunity. And yeah, just kind of kept doing it ever since.
You've done a really good job at tearing people apart.
Thank you. Thank
you. I've done other kinds of journalism. I did music journalism and, entertainment journalism. I mean, I edited magazines. And I think comics people are the nicest people. I really, really do believe that. You know, I did a little bit of sports stuff, and I hate... Those were not the nicest people, all right? So I guess, you know, comics are the only thing that'll have me, really. So, but I like hanging around. And then you get to meet sports stars, you get to meet music stars, you get to meet interesting, fascinating people everywhere, you know? And I'm really lucky that way. So I'm sure everyone on the panel would agree with that. You know, you meet some amazing, incredible, creative people and get to talk to them about cool things. And, you know, that's a good way to live your life, really.
Thank you.
Is there any people in the industry that you just cannot get enough of, that you just love what they're writing, or arts, or anything like that?
You mean people who make comics?
Yeah.
Other bloggers?
No.
What was the construction that we used to love, or we used to hate, and now we love? Or what was the...
Is there any comic writer or artist that just cannot get enough of, you just love so much?
Frank Quitely. Yeah. I would, if I had the money, I would just have him to come around my house and just draw all day. Anything and everything. Him. Absolutely. I've loved his work for about 20 years since I started seeing it in the big books and stuff. Yeah.
Darwin Cook, for me.
Yeah. I mean, I love the...
If you ask me 10 minutes, I'll think of someone else.
I know, Tom, you were about to say the Hernandez brothers. I mean, I agree with that. Luckily, they're very prolific. I wish Brian Lee O'Malley. He has another book. Yeah, I'm so eager to see that, you know? So I wish I didn't have to wait so long for his next book to come out, so...
Yeah. There's a strip cartoonist named Richard Thompson who does a strip called Cul-de-Sac that when it came out, I loved it so much, I was able to basically write about it every day and at least bring comic book people to looking at the strip. And that was a wonderful thing to get to do. Like, if that's the only thing I get to do, that's, you know, go look at this awesome comic strip. That's not a bad thing.
Today I got the Dave Stevens book that IDW put out of his non-Rocketeer comics, just with the latest thing to get. And I'm just flipping through it. And every page is one of the most beautiful drawings I've ever seen in my life. And so, yeah, but now it's Dave Stevens. Forget Darwin Cook.
Yeah. If you decide to rename this event for this con this year, I would be 100% for that.
But actually, it's just the thing we've seen before. Another fellow who loves British cartoonist called Terry Wiley, who can't get work in America to save his life, does a book called Sleaze Castle. And I've loved this book since I would. So as a young man, I've always been writing about it. No one seems to read what I write about him, but I'll keep writing about him because I absolutely love his work. And they put a big hardcover of his work together. They asked me to write the foreword. I was really, really happy. So yeah, there are certain people I think that kind of hold to your heart.
I mean, I can't speak for anyone else, but I mean, my house is like, you know, there's barely room for me because I have so many comics in it, you know. And I mean, there's lots of people who, I mean, I love Rick Geary. He has a new book here. He does those murder books, you know, they're amazing. Yeah. I love those. Yeah. From, you know, like, Jason from Fantagraphics. I mean, I write about them all the time. If you read my blog, you know, because I mean, I just blog all the time about them. But, you know, the cartoonist Jason from Norway, he's another one. Like, anytime a new book comes out, I just can't wait to read it. So.
Is there someone you like? Is there someone that does it for you?
Sadly, I have nothing on top of my head.
That's why we're deprived.
Then you cannot be a comic explorer, young man.
Just read our websites and we'll tell you.
Yeah.
Any further questions?
So do you guys read our site? How many of you out there read our sites? Okay, so, alright, quite a few. Alright, excellent.
Thank you. So what's right. Say about half of them are just being polite.
I know.
Sorry, Doug, did you have another question? One of the things that the people have asked me this weekend is, you know, you must get so many emails from publishers, public relations people, and creators pitching you on stories, and how do you deal with it politically, how do you deal with it ethically, things like that. I'd like to put that question to the panel.
Well, I usually really, really piss them off and they stop sending people press releases. That's the usual. I'd recommend that.
You're not even on the list.
A number of those, yeah, I won't get anything from certain publishers because they don't want me to cover them. So what it means, I cover them anyway, just through non-official sources, and it ends up being far worse.
Having nothing to lose is a big liberator.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I have the excuse of, forgetfulness and, you know, age. So I ran into on the floor. There was somebody who I emailed like 5 times about, oh, I'm going to cover your book, and, you know, I'm going to read it. And I mean, he knew better, but, you know, and of course, he's the first person I ran into at the con. He's like, you never read my book, did you? I was like, I made some excuses, and I felt horrible. I mean, I honestly meant to read the book, but, you know, run up to the Comic-Con is not really the time to be reading comics. So, I get pissed off. And it is funny, it cycles through. Like, I mean, I think Marvel and DC are pretty much, you know, resigned to my attitude about a lot of their work. And so I don't, you know, they've written me off completely. And so now I get more complaints from publishers who aren't Marvel and DC. And, you juggle it, you know. I think people understand I'm writing things that I are, you know, either my opinion or things that I source pretty well. So, you know, and but nobody likes people to be mad at them. So, Tom, do you get those angry letters from Radical Comics?
No, I don't. Actually, I don't understand Andy's question. I mean, they're just PR people are just PR people. What's the problem? What do you think that people are?
Well, there's always people always wonder like how. I mean, to put it bluntly, to what degree can you tell them to go fuck themselves and still get
100%?
Yeah. PR people and the companies, they need you more than you need them. And more websites should learn that.
There are definitely times when I think, I mean, I'm actually very glad to get this sort of wide on these press releases, because sometimes it does let me know that there's something happening that I might want to write about. You know, because we like the stuff that we write about.
Yeah.
You know, it's good to know about it. Sometimes they say, would you want to interview someone, like maybe an editor-in-chief or something like that? And I do. But then they don't get the questions that they want.
Right.
And this big back and forth. Like, the relationships can get very tense, you know. And I've made decisions where I said, well, I could do this interview and I could ask 90% of the questions I want to ask, and I can't ask the 10%, and I've decided, you know, I could...
Well, I'd never do any kind of coverage if there was that kind of restriction.
You know?
Yeah, why can't you? I mean,
do you need
a relationship? Or?
No, it's not a matter of need, it's just I know sometimes that I'll get that 10% later. You know, it's a calculation for us.
But it's also just people get mad, you know? People get mad at you, and like, it's like I said, I mean, you don't, you know... I mean, I don't enjoy pissing people off. I mean, that's not when I wake up in the morning and say, you know, who am I going to make mad today? You know, it's more like I just write things that are, you know, I feel very strongly about. And, you know, I'm a grown-up. I know what's going to happen.
It does happen sometimes. You get cut off. Like as Rich says, yeah. It doesn't really hurt you.
Yeah.
I think it does generally improve everyone to get along if they can. I mean, the situations come up where it's just not going to happen. Like, we don't have, for a long time, we didn't have any, you know, relationship with BC at all. And that was true when I was at CBR, too. You know.
Yeah, that was my fault. Yeah, when I was at CBR.
But we, you know, we did fine. We still write about the stuff that we want to write about.
Yeah.
Neither one of those companies will talk to me at all right now, I don't think. Or they don't when I ask them stuff. And at Marvel, you know, I work for Marvel. I got hired to do a series of interviews for the Icon site, and I did a Matt Fraction interview. I was really flattered to be asked, and then I said something in the New York Times, I guess, about the company, and they fired me and didn't pay me. So it's like, you know, all like $25 or whatever goofy amount that I agreed to do these interviews, I was so flattered to be asked to do. So they're kind of babies. I mean, it would be horrible to be, like, dependent on those people for coverage, I guess, but I don't know, to write about something else, I guess, my attitude.
And just as we get into this fruitful territory, we've been getting the sign that we got to stop. Thank you so much for coming.